I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go, go, go!
With Erleada, apalutamide, being there is possible. Erleada is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. Erleada may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. Erleada can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if Erleada is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit Erleada.com. CP43-9267-V1.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now. In a city where time disappears, we create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big. We go all night. And here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
Hello and welcome to the Rosh Markazi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mighty Air 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. A lot to get into here on a Thursday. Let's not waste any more time after a little bit of a break for a good reason last week, where we welcome back in Joe Favorito. Joe, how are you?
Back on the East Coast of the United States, Arash.
I was going to say, so we took a break last week for good reason. You were in London, and I was watching these games. It was the Phillies and the Mets. Phillies and the Mets. You went there, and you got some sightseeing in as well. First of all, what is the, again, we know that the National Football League wants to expand. You know, they play games in London and Germany, and they'll be having a game in Brazil this year. With Major League Baseball, long season, what is the league's goal, and how close did they get to achieving their goal with this two-game series that you attended?
Well, second time that it's been there, it will be going back. Baseball has done games in Korea and Japan, regular season games, has done Mexico now. And the sauce that they've kind of put together is the same one that at least three of the other major leagues have done now, the NFL, the NBA, and the NHL. And the idea, which I think makes a tremendous amount of sense, is let's not go put franchises over there.
Yeah.
Let's just bring the best of our best and figure out how we can give a quality product and build fandom by letting people see real games, not exhibition games. And I think it's been a tremendous success. And I think that's the way it's going to go. By the way, the other side of that is international properties have now realized that. Today is Thursday. Yesterday, I was at the last game in New York for the Cricket World Cup. 35,000 people in a temporary stadium that, by the way, for people in Vegas, will know the stadium very well because it was the Formula One stadium that they trucked across the country at the cost of $35 million to put into a park on Long Island. And it was an amazing, amazing one-off experience where you saw the best of the best play in the Cricket World Cup. And you've now seen Australian rules football come to Las Vegas. You've had sevens rugby in Las Vegas. You've had other sports now realize that this is the way we're going to do it. We're not going to worry about continuing to bring friendlies over where people who are shortly interested in what's going on to come and kind of experience that, which we've seen with, you know, most of the soccer clubs coming here. They want the best of the best. So what I do think you're going to continue to see, and FIFA last week talked about now allowing this, is regular season Premier League, La Liga, Serie A matches taking place in the United States in the fall and winter, because that's what fans want. You can make a tremendous amount of money, and all that has started by what the NFL, the NHL, Major League Baseball, and originally the NBA did by taking regular season matches abroad and proving that it doesn't kill players to do it if it's for one or two games, because people want the best of the best. And that's what we saw last week with baseball. The two largest crowds in Major League Baseball anywhere this year were in London last weekend. 55,000, the Olympic Stadium where West Ham plays during the Premier League season, for Saturday and Sunday. And I would say it was probably a tremendous amount of support from the Phillies fans who came from Philadelphia, not great support from the Mets fans. But then there was a float, I would say, of probably 10 to 15,000 people who were Europeans who wanted to come and check this out, because we followed it on MLB.com. We followed it on MLB Network. We've seen the World Baseball Classic, and we wanted to come and experience it, and they got a heck of a show.
You know, the key there is regular season games, mm-hmm. regular season matches. In summer, as you know, Joe, for years and years and years, we've seen some of the best soccer clubs in the world will come here during the summer. And again, that'll continue this summer. For example, Arsenal and Manchester United will play at SoFi Stadium. Again, Stan Kroenke owns the Arsenal Football Club and also SoFi Stadium. But great to see regular season games. What was the, from a media perspective, I mean, how was it covered when you went back to your hotel? You know, like, how was it covered, you know, TV, the tabloids, the newspapers? Was this embraced?
It's growing steadily. I think the biggest growth is on the social side. So Trafalgar Square had screens up. We actually went to the Saturday game, and then Sunday we kind of walked around a good part of London and ended up going to the MLB experience, which was free, big screens. They had people there talking about it. Now, is it what you would think is, you know, in the program, is there an explanation of the rules of baseball? Yes, because people are coming for the first time. But the experience when you walked in the stadium was tremendous. You thought you could have been at Dodger Stadium or at Citizens Bank Park. Didn't change that much. It was very much an American experience, not hokey in any way, shape, or form. The media showed up. They certainly will. I think there's a tremendously larger group of media that cover the NFL than cover Major League Baseball. And it's going to continue to evolve where, you know, we are now in a global world where it doesn't take that much. And the biggest change in the entire thing was that NBC took the chance at the Premier League to show that people would watch the best soccer in the world at 9 o'clock in the morning Eastern time, 6 o'clock in the morning on the West Coast, on whatever device you wanted to, or on NBC on Sundays. Once that barrier was broken, you know, the off of breakfast at Wimbledon was nice, but it was an anomaly. Now you see it all the time. CBS putting on Champions League matches in the middle of the day on CBS, not on a sports channel or on a digital channel. And you're going to continue to see that. And what that's done is it's prove to people here that they know, they're savvy, they know the best of the best, just like people in the rest of the world do, and that's what they want to see. Yes, the soccer friendlies will continue to do well here. There'll be celebrations, but what people really, really want and will pay a lot of money for is to see El Clasico in the United States, to see, you know, the Manchester Derby in the United States. And I 100% believe that is going to happen in the next couple of years.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Joe, the last time we talked, unfortunately, we touched on the passing of Bill Walton. Now we're catching up again. Want to bring up the passing of Jerry West. Just an amazing human being. Someone I got to chat with from time to time, again, covering the Lakers, the Clippers, and the Warriors. But the impact he had, you no doubt remember him as a player. I remember him as an executive. I guess I wanted to begin with your remembrance of Jerry West, but if your paths had crossed.
Well, a couple times, very high level, but I learned of Jerry West much more from the people who were around him, who I know. Gordon Chiesa, Raymond Ritter, John Black, my good friend Paul Hewitt, who's now the coach of the G League team for the Clippers, got to know Jerry very, very well over the last few years. Mike Tolan, you know, and the people who were around him who knew him as a person as much as an executive. And, you know, he was very open in his book and elsewhere talking about his battles with depression, the family issues he overcame coming from West Virginia. So, you know, I think, you know, the memory of Jerry West for many people will be the success he's had with places, not just in Los Angeles, but in Memphis and other places where he's been involved with franchises, and obviously Golden State, where he was an advisor for a while. But also, you know, what he did to make mental wellness important and make people understand that, you know, here was literally the logo. The logo had issues too. Now, the one thing I will say, Arash, is people always say that things come in threes. I really, really hope that we don't get a third, because Bill Walton and obviously Jerry West were icons of the NBA, big parts of obviously the, you know, the greater Southern California community. And I think people are going to suffer and have those losses for a long time to come, ironically, both happening right around the NBA Finals.
Yeah, exactly. Just the impact he had on winning the first championship for the Lakers in Los Angeles, really putting together that Showtime team, putting together Kobe and Shaq as well. Shifting gears to the finals again, I thought, and I think this still could be a moment for hockey with the Stanley Cup final, the NBA finals as we sit here on a Thursday. Looks like it could be a sweep or a gentleman sweep of the Celtics taking a 3-0 series lead last night. The issue here, I think, Joe, and you can't do anything about it, these are probably the two best teams. Like, if it was the New York Rangers, right, and we are talking about them perhaps hoisting their first cup since the 94, you know, I think this would be a bigger story. But here we are, the finals, NBA finals is about to be done in a sweep, and it's not been a competitive series. And still no one's talking about the Stanley Cup final between Florida and the Edmonton Oilers, partly because of the two teams, I think, involved. Again, not hockey's fault, but your thoughts on the way this postseason has played out.
Yeah, I mean, it's a challenge, and it's just the nature of the sport. You know, the NHL's made tremendous, tremendous strides over the last few years under Gary Bettman, and will continue to do. I think it's anticlimactic with both finals, actually, this year, and if they go out the way they're going to go out. Hopefully America gets a little bit more exposed to Connor McDavid going forward. Yeah. I saw Helene Helliott in one of her Substacks, the great Substacks that she does, pointed out earlier this week that the first time the Oilers had Wayne Gretzky in the finals and were defeated by the Islanders in the last of their legendary run, Wayne Gretzky had no points in the first three games, and it took literally another year for him to finally acclimate to the brightest lights and then eventually dethrone the Islanders and started the Edmonton dynasty, which transcended sport and transcended continents. And I think that that can happen again with the Edmonton Oilers and Connor McDavid. It's just a shame that, you know, I agree. If they were playing the Rangers, I think many more people would be interested in playing the Florida Panthers. It's just, that's just the way it goes. But, you know, by the way, lots of credit to the Panthers for getting there.
Yeah.
And you know, we'll see what happens. And not to take anything away from the run that the Mavericks have done under Jason Kidd as well.
Yeah. By the way, when you do the overhead shot of where the Panthers play, because I've been there a couple of times, like in the middle of nowhere, Joe. I mean, again, I'm not saying that like all of these arenas have to be shoehorned like into downtown, but they do these like overhead shots, and it's like, you know, it's, you know, not a lot happening there. And again,
they're not the Miami Panthers.
Exactly. I mean, there you go.
You know, and that's the challenge of the world we're in right now, where multi-use facilities are being built in places, hopefully, that it develops around them. The best example is the Battery in Atlanta, where a whole community developed around a stadium that was being built. But those are real estate plays that take years and years to do. And South Florida is kind of a different animal unto itself.
We kind of touched on this in terms of the globalization of the game. Now the NBA looks at expansion, and this is a kind of a unique one in the sense that we all, most people, think it's going to be Las Vegas and Seattle. Mexico City is often brought up, and I've talked to enough people who have said that they're not just including that just because. I mean, they are very high on Mexico City. They play games there one way or the like other, whether it's expansion or whether it could be with a struggling franchise, they are serious about Mexico City. Your thoughts on that, Joe, from this perspective? You know, we have seen leagues obviously put franchises in Canada, Toronto specifically. Mexico City, your thought on that perhaps being a future home of a professional team?
So I go back to some of the comments that David Stern made before he passed, and two of them specifically. One was one of the greatest regrets he ever had was moving the Vancouver Grizzlies out of Vancouver at the time than they did. The other one, which he constantly talked about, was the value of Mexico City and how a Mexican franchise could continue to grow. And that's been passed on to Adam Silver. You know, tremendous success there with games. The question, I think it's still way too early. There's a lot of issues, tax implications, altitude is an issue. And then you could have a fan base, but a fan base at what price point? And that's where franchises continue to look for corporate dollars to really drive what a franchise is so it's affordable and it makes sense. And there are, let's be honest, there are security issues that, that have to factor into that don't take place in anywhere else in North America. Do I think it could happen? I don't think it happens this time around. I think there's, you know, the two horses leading the race, and then there's everybody, you know, you throw probably another six or seven franchises into that, cities into that mix behind it, including one like Kansas City that never gets mentioned. But I think it's the end of the day, whenever the TV deal is signed, not too long after that, you're going to be saying hello, Vegas, wherever they play, and hello, welcome back to Seattle, and hopefully they call them the Supersonics.
What was his thought with Vancouver? Again, just a really a tough time period for Vancouver. I mean, like if they had put a franchise there now, it would certainly succeed. One of the, again, that they took a, the Northwest. They took Seattle Supersonics away. They took the Vancouver Grizzlies away. The Pacific Northwest, they only have Portland. Again, we both probably think that that's going to change soon. What was the regret with Vancouver? I mean, like if you had it, would he give it more time?
Well, I think when you brought in a new owner, because they were the second owners who were not Canadian, they were based in Oklahoma City, and you kind of let that go and say, you know, we're gonna, you know, we want to move and we want to figure out how to do it. And then there was the really unique situation of Hurricane Katrina that came along. And the relocation of what were then the Hornets for a while, suddenly it became a much more viable city. And you saw these smaller markets, whether it was Memphis or Oklahoma City. And eventually, you know, Michael Heisley, who was the owner of the team, said, you know what? I'm a Tennessean and I want to, we have an arena. We've got a brand new arena. We've got some corporate dollars coming in from places like FedEx. And as much as we're interested in Vancouver, it's not the place we want to be. And the league acquiesced to it at the time. And I think looking back now, it was probably like David had said before he passed away, one of the biggest mistakes that they let that happen. Because absolutely, you know, when you look at the success of the Canucks and the viability of that market as an international market going towards Asia, there's no doubt that a team could have succeeded. Now, could you put a team back there? It's a different time right now. And you'd probably need its own arena. You'd have to figure out the broadcast rights. You know, the Raptors have continued to make great strides in growing themselves as the national team of Canada in a world where basketball is continuing to really thrive and hockey participation is dropping in Canada. So I think it's a shame that Vancouver doesn't come up in the conversation. I think it could down the road, but, you know, that's the probably $10 billion with a B dollar question, you know, for an expansion franchise or a relocation somewhere down the road, just not now.
Joe, the other big baseball series last week was the Dodgers and the Yankees, and it lived up to all the hype in terms of a very dramatic game. One of the series, a blowout Dodger win in game two, but another kind of close game for game three. Again, you talked to the players. when generally they don't make these kind of comments any 162 game season. They said it had a postseason vibe. It felt like that. Obviously, that would be the dream of Major League Baseball to get that Dodgers-Yankees World Series once again. A, did you watch those games? And B, I mean, how big would that be for Major League Baseball to get Dodgers-Yankees? They've been close, right? With the Dodgers, they've gone up against Houston or Tampa Bay or Boston, but we have not had Dodgers-Yankees. How big would a Dodgers-Yankees World Series be?
Well, I think the big thing would be Shohei Ohtani against Aaron Judge. That's the catch. That's really what you want to do. That's what's really, really important. I think the other piece of it, Dodgers and Yankees is important, two major markets. East Coast, West Coast, crosses the country, history, plays into everything. I did not watch. I was in London last weekend. I did see some of the pictures of Dodger faithful basically taking over Yankee Stadium, which was really, really interesting. Because the Dodgers still have a presence here. And I think it would be great for baseball, not the only matchup you need in the World Series, but there's the legacy of this tremendous drought you have in New York, where there hasn't been a championship since the Giants in 2012, the longest in the history of the city. And I think people would love it. They love heroes and villains, but I think the most important thing you would love is having Shohei Ohtani and everything that he brings to the table in the World Series against Aaron Judge and everything that he does. That's really what drives the interest.
Let's close out on this. TNT, again, we still don't know if they're going to be left out in the cold with the NBA, but they do get the French Open. They do get a sliver of some college football playoff games. Your thoughts on TNT? Again, they're clearly not punting on sports, but where are they at right now?
Well, the one thing that's interesting is if the merger happens and they are part of a company that has NFL rights, as my colleague Mike McCarthy asked me this morning, could they actually get an NFL game back on TNT? Mm-hmm. And that is certainly in the mix if the merger happens. I would not sleep on anything that Warner Brothers Discovery is doing. Big company. People have seen the mistakes of walking away from the NFL and the NBA in the past. You know, they probably didn't want to bid on the price that NBC and Peacock and Telemundo are going to pick up for the NBA this time. But there's lots and lots of other things you could go and do. And other rights are going to come up, including, by the way, March Madness in a couple of years. So let's see where that goes.
I mean, the big thing about the March Madness is now that colleges are they can pay players, and I mean, pay for play is now a thing in college. When you talk about a multi-billion-dollar TV rights deal, you know, what part of that goes to the players? That'll be, so something to track. And Mike Breen, by the way, looks like he may be looking for a new color commentator in addition to Doris Burke, as JJ Redick, following at least game four this weekend, we'll be heading to Los Angeles to interview for the Lakers job. And so I'm sure that'll all be settled, Joe, when we're back here again on Thursday, giving you our take on sports media. So let's leave it there for now. And we'll have Joe back on next week. When we come back, we will be welcomed by the Sporting Tribune crew as we break down JJ Redick once again as the forefront, as the leader in the pack to be the next head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. What do we think about that? We'll talk about all that and more when we come back right here on the Mightier 1090 in Southern California, the Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now, in a city where time disappears. We create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big, we go all night, and here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
Welcome back to the Rush Marconzi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. Just as a reminder, if you have a question or comment or want to win tickets to an upcoming game in Southern California, Las Vegas, or Hawaii, call our hotline 310-400-0340. All right, let's welcome into the show from the Sporting Tribune, Grant Mona. Grant, how are you?
Doing well, except that now it's inevitable that the NBA season is almost over, Rosh. We have another, honestly, bad series if we're looking at it from that perspective, but I know a lot of Los Angeles fans here in Southern California aren't happy about the result, but The Celtics are playing pretty well.
They are. I mean, listen, if they complete the sweep, and again, as Grant mentioned, the Celtics taking a 3-0 series lead last night, so that this series is done. Again, no team in NBA history has ever come back from being down 3-0 in a series. So it's just a matter of when, not if. The thing is, like, if the Celtics complete the sweep here, this will be one of the more dominant postseason runs in league history, following a really dominant regular season run. I mean, if you look at where the Milwaukee Bucks were as the number two seed, I mean, they've never really been challenged this season. So, listen, I mean, Drew Holiday, I mean, we knew that was a big trade when it happened, but it looked like he could be the final piece to their championship puzzle. And not a happy moment if it does finally happen for any Lakers fans, because both franchises were tied with 17 championships. If the Celtics win, obviously, they would have 18. So to your point, though, Grant, this postseason, following the first couple of rounds, at least, yeah, listen, the first two rounds had some good series. The conference finals and the NBA finals have been an absolute joke, basically, whether it's a sweep or a gentleman's sweep. It has not been very good. A kind of a moment here for hockey, but unfortunately for them, and it's not really their fault. I mean, no one's really that, yes, you got Connor McDavid, but like the Edmonton Oilers and the Florida Panthers. I mean, if they had like New York, in the Stanley Cup final, for example, I think that this could have been a moment for hockey, but the season is going to be over here fairly soon. The biggest thing for me is how different some of these teams have looked. For example, the Denver Nuggets, the way they looked in beating the Lakers in five, and then the way that they looked in losing to the Timberwolves. And then the way that the Timberwolves looked following beating the Nuggets, and the way that they basically like laid down against the Mavs. And again, the way that the Mavs have really improved this entire postseason, beating the Clippers, beating the Thunder, beating the Timberwolves, and now on the cusp of being swept. A lot to get into, but let's start with here. This, what's been wrong with Dallas? And then Luka just absolutely getting torched by the media, Brian Windhorst in particular. Your thoughts on that?
He's a big part of it, Arash. Yeah. He's not playing defense. I think I read a stat where he has the three highest blow-by percentages in the past 10 years by any player, just in this playoffs alone. So the highest blow-by percentage is this finals. Then it was the Clippers series in the first round, and then it was the Thunder series. So he has the three highest blow-by percentages by a defender in NBA in the last 10 years.
Wow.
By a player. So whatever Brian Windhorst said is right. It's absolutely right. Every time, and he kind of got away from it in the Minnesota series. The Minnesota series is probably the best series that he played in terms of not complaining, in terms of health, in terms of not complaining about his injuries. And then it's just been another complete reversal of what we saw. And it's been what we saw in the first two rounds where, you know, he's a fantastic player, but you know, he makes a shot and immediately looks at the ref. Even if it's not a foul, he will look at the referee and say, hey, what did you see? Why didn't you call that? And he is doing it all the way up to court where he misses defensive assignments. And there's a viral clip going around social media right now of him hitting a three, or actually him missing a step back three. And instead of getting back on defense and guarding Sam Hauser, who then hits a three, he is barking at the referee all the way down the court until he misses his defensive assignment, who was Sam Hauser. And, you know, there's just moments like that where I have seen it since the first round. Like, I saw it all first round. He was really agitated by that Clippers defense, and, you know, it really got into his head. And, you know, then the Thunder, he had a better series, but they were still getting into his head. And then that Minnesota series, he just had his way. And I'm seeing a lot of the same things here in the finals that I saw in those first two, where the Celtics are just getting into his head, the role player's head. And, you know, Kyrie had his best game of the finals. He had 35 points, I believe, And it still wasn't enough. Like, it, you know, because you have to have one of your best players be one of the better defenders. I've always believed that. I always think that one, when your best player is on, and that's why Jaylen Brown is doing so well and Jason Tatum as well. One of your best players, whether it be your one or your two, they have to be a good defender as well. And the Mavericks have relied on Daniel Gafford and PJ Washington and, you know, Derek Jones Jr., to kind of solidify their defense. But Luka and Kyrie are notorious for not being good defenders. And my thing coming into this series, Arash, was that the Celtics have so many great defenders to throw at Luka and Kyrie. They have Derek White and Drew Holiday and Tatum and Brown. That's four wing defenders that you can throw at those guys, and it's been proven to be the difference so far. I know that Luka did put up 30 plus points, but you know, Brian Windhorst is right. He has to change his mentality if he wants to win a title, and they're not going to win it this year. The Celtics,
no.
I don't know if they'll win it in four. I don't know if they'll sweep, but they will probably win it in four or five.
Yeah.
And the Celtics, they are just playing like such a great two-way basketball team. I mean, Jaylen Brown deserves finals MVP for sure. He took over down the stretch. He had clutch shots. And I know there's a lot of controversy about that too, but he looks like the best player in the series, and the best player in the series usually wins the series. So look, I got to give a ton of credit to the Celtics. This is who we thought that they would be 2 years ago, last year, even this year. Like, this is the team they're supposed to be playing like, and they're finally living up to it. I think that's the main thing, is they're finally living up to that hype that everyone gives them year in and year out.
It's a great point, Grant, you know, because they've been at the cusp in terms of either, you know, when they lost to the Warriors a couple of years ago, they got to the finals. But like, they get to the conference finals. They are usually one of, if not the favorites, to get to the finals. So they've been knocking up this on this door for quite a while. I think a lot of Celtics fans still have PTSD from losing to the Miami Heat when the Heat were a play-in team and they were, you know, clearly like, if not the best team in the league, certainly one of them. And so listen, this has been a long time coming. Yes, it's a very proud franchise with a lot of history, but this group in particular, they've been knocking at this door for a number of years. And we've talked about that before, how, you know, to win a title, you have to go through those setbacks. You have to go through those losses. Well, this group has endured a ton. You know, this wasn't like the big three. You know, when they brought that big three together in their first year of KG, Paul Pierce, and Ray, they won a title. But this group, I mean, they've, like, year in and year out, conference finals, to get to the finals. The most surprising thing, though, again, you know, we talk about, you know, this could be their 18th championship in franchise history. This would only be their second since 1986 and their first since 2008. Yes, historically great franchise, but really since 1986 and 87, I mean, I've really not kind of been in the championship conversation, but this is a deserved title, as hard as it is for me to say, just because if you're a Laker fan, you don't want to go back to the Celtics having the most titles. So, switching gears again, how do the Lakers finally, tie the Celtics and maybe pass the Celtics? Well, they might try to do that with JJ Redick. We got the report from Woj on Thursday, kind of confirming what we've known for a while, that JJ Redick will formally interview for the Lakers job over the weekend. Either the finals will be done or JJ will take a short break before game five. Grant, listen, this is the direction this thing has been going in since the Lakers season came to an end. We had a weird 4 days there, really, from Thursday to Monday, where out of nowhere, Dan Hurley was in the conversation. They flew Dan Hurley out. Apparently, they gave him, a 6-year, $70 million. This part of the story is one that I don't know to what detail Jeannie and Rob will get into at the press conference. They probably won't talk about it, but like, it came out of nowhere. Again, like at no point, except for those 4 days from Thursday morning to Monday morning, was Dan Hurley even a part of the conversation. So let me first go to JJ. He's going to formally interview. Kind of amazed that this process hasn't already happened yet. Your thoughts on JJ once again being the favorite in the clubhouse to be the next head coach.
Yeah, I'm so surprised that they haven't even done this yet. Yeah. I know that there were reports of them having an interview, but I think that was just like a formal handshake thing a while back. I guess this will be an actual interview because there were reports that James Borrego has already had an interview, like an actual sit-down interview with them. And, you know, I don't know what the direction with that is because just yesterday on Wednesday, it was like, oh, hey, James Borrego is the leading candidate. And now we get the reports from Woj that it's, you know, that JJ Redick is the leading candidate or at the forefront of it, if everything goes well, is what he said. I still think JJ is going to be the coach. I mean, there's a lot of talk about, oh, you know, I even said this too, where, oh, is he going to be offended by what they did with Dan Hiller? No, he's not. He's not that egotistical. He's not that kind of guy. I think that he really does want to get into coaching. Like I mentioned in previous shows, he was willing to take an interview with Toronto. He was interested in the Charlotte job. And look, it's the Lakers. You got to take this. And especially now that he's built up a rapport with LeBron James and they have that podcast. You can kind of see the chemistry that they have already. I think there's just so much, there's too much smoke behind it to where it doesn't happen. Like it should happen now. And, you know, for JJ, I think that, you know, what does the contract look like, Arash? Like, I'm curious to see what you think, what his contract would look like, because it's not going to be, I don't think, anywhere near 6 for $70. And I don't know if they'll give him 5 or 6 years. Maybe 3, maybe like at most 4. Like I'm not sure what this decision would like. Is it for the future? Is it for now? Is it for the LeBron era? Like, because when you are going after Dan Hurley, right? And if you're the Lakers and you're going after Dan Hurley, you're doing it for not just the LeBron era now, but you're doing it for the future as well. So you give him a longer deal. And I always thought that would be more than 6 years, but obviously they thought differently. So for JJ Redick, I'm curious to see like what their direction is in terms of, hey, can this guy be our franchise guy 5 years from now? Or is this just a stopgap guy that can just get us through this LeBron and AD era and then we'll figure it out after that? So I don't know. I'm assuming maybe a 3 or 4 year deal, but Arash, I'm curious to see it, you know, for Laker people, like, what do you think his deal would entail? You think it's 3 or longer?
I think it's longer. And I don't have the breakdown of all these. And again, I tweeted this out and I was surprised at how viral it went, only because nothing was groundbreaking. And then I had a couple of Laker fans ask, and again, this is like what they love to do. Like, are you on Steve Ballmer's payroll? Like, you're making the job look terrible. And I'm like, so this was the tweet, which is like common knowledge. I said, these are the red flags for the Lakers head coaching job. Frank Vogel won a title less than 2 years later, he's fired. Darvin Ham takes over a team that did make the playoffs the years before and a team that was the 13th seed at the trade deadline, takes them. When I say takes them, he's the head coach of that team, gets to the Western Conference Finals. Less than 1 year later, he's fired. No head coach since Phil Jackson. So, I mean, like, think how long it's been since Phil Jackson coached Kobe and Powell and that team. Since Phil, no coach has lasted longer than 3 seasons. You've had coaches who've lasted 1 full season, 2 seasons, and 3 seasons. No one has lasted longer than 3 seasons. There's no coach who's looking at that and saying, oh, like, that's job security. Like, what more do you want if you're, Frank Vogel is the poster child for this. He won a damn championship, and less than 2 calendar years later, he was gone. So, and the reason I bring this up is I forget what they signed these coaches to. So if it was a 5-year deal, you have to pay out the last 2 years. Or if it's a situation like Vogel and another team hires you, then you don't have to pay that year. So my guess is going to be a 5-year deal. I don't know how you can't give the coach, at least publicly, that stability. And again, it won't be the same kind of 10 plus million dollars per year. At least I don't think it should be or needs to be. But if it's a 5-year deal and for whatever reason you treat him like you did every coach since Phil Jackson, you fire him after 3 seasons, then you're just on the hook for 2 more years. And if you're the Lakers, like, you know, all the poverty jokes aside, you can afford 2 years of this contract. And listen, if JJ proves to be a coach that other teams in the league like, and he gets hired somewhere else, you're off the hook there. So I think, Grant, to your question, I think it's a 5-year contract. I think it at least should be, or at least a 4+1 type of a deal where, you know, the team has the chance to pick up the 5th year. But, you know, it goes without saying, it can't be a 2-year deal. Even if it's a 3-year deal, it doesn't look great. Some are saying, you know, with Byron Scott, for example, and the reason that we all kind of felt that that was like a 2-year situation is that they wanted Luke Walton. There was no way Luke Walton was going to be hired as the head coach to coach Kobe Bryant. So it was basically Byron Scott was hired to be the coach for the final 2 seasons of Kobe's career. And then they brought in Luke, who was really the guy that they wanted. And then when they got LeBron, it was like, oh, we can't have like Luke Walton coach LeBron James. So the JJ dynamic is interesting because, again, like you're really seeing through their podcast together, you know, the mindset and their conversations of like how to run the offense, how to run plays like kind of a timeout, certain situations like that. So it is very interesting. What do you think about his coaching staff, Grant? Again, like if you're talking about a first-year head coach who is 39 today, will be 40 likely by the time they have the press conference. His birthday is, I think, June 24th. So, you know, he's young, but, you know, it's a little bit different when you have a coach in his 30s. What do you think his coaching staff will look like?
It has to be veterans. I mean, yeah. You got to bring in some veterans around him. And you know, a lot of people speculate, oh, well, he's not going to like that because maybe they'll replace him. No, he needs veteran guidance on that coaching staff, especially for a guy that's never coached before. And you could bring up the AAU stuff and all the youth basketball stuff. It's fine, but he's never coached before. And for a guy that's going to be coaching the biggest brand in all of basketball, you're going to need some support there and some guidance a little bit. Yes, he's great with X's and O's. Yes, he's a great basketball mind. Yes, he's a genius. Yes, he has a rapport with LeBron James, but you still need to know about all the other things, how to handle media. And I know he's great in the media. He has a pod and he's been on the broadcast. But you need to know how to handle the fans, you know, how to handle the front office and that dynamic. So just bringing in veterans around him, I'm not sure who, because I don't know if James Borrego is going to be an assistant, because there's talks about him going to Cleveland to be the head coach there. So I don't know if he'll accept an assistant job, but regardless, you need to get, and I don't think Frank Vogel's going to become an assistant for the Lakers either.
That'd be wild, by the way.
Yeah, it would be wild. That one I would be a little bit speculative about. But in terms of his staff, it has to be guys that have been in the league for years and been head coaches or been assistant coaches. And look, J.J. Redick's been around the league for a long time, so he knows a lot of veterans. You know, I think for Laker fans, a lot of the chatter is Rajon Rondo. That would be a great get. But again, he hasn't coached either. So, you know, as great of a coach as I think Rajon Rondo will eventually be, I think you need guys that have had coaching experience, veteran coaching experience, even if you grab somebody from college or an assistant from another team. I think that would be ideal for him because I think he can be a good head coach. I really do. I know there's this whole podcaster thing going around where, oh, he's only a podcaster. But he has a great basketball mind and he knows his X's and O's. So you just need to build that player coach relationship, and you need veteran coaches around him to kind of supplement that dynamic and be that connect between the front office and head coach, because it's much different when you're talking about it. But when you're actually in the huddle and when you're actually around the tunnels and in the offices, it's a lot different. So a veteran coaching staff would be ideal. I have no idea who they're going to go after, though.
But I like the Rajon Rondo role for the Jared Dudley role that Jason Kidd hired him for with the Mavericks, where Dudley was a player while Kidd was an assistant coach with the Lakers. And again, he made the seamless transition from player to assistant coach. And again, Rondo's one of those guys who on a couple of fronts. A, he's won multiple championships, once with the Celtics, of course, and then again with the Lakers. And so that there's a respect level with LeBron, but also a guy that I have not heard a single person say that Rondo is not going to be a great head coach one day. So like him as an assistant, but again, whether it's Scott Brooks, whether it's someone else who you definitely need a former head coach as an assistant, but looks like it's heading in the direction of J.J. Redick being the next head coach of the Lakers. But we'll see how that all that pans out. Grant, you're the best. That's all the time we have for today. Let's do it again tomorrow. Until then, this is Arash Markazi saying stay safe and stay healthy.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now, in a city where time disappears. We create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big. We go all night. And here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go, 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 go! Go.
With Erleada, apalutamide, being there is possible. Erleada is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. Erleada may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. Erleada can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if Erleada is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit Erleada.com. CP43-9267-V1.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile Coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next, you need the team to act on feedback fast. So you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
For a limited time, visit Miro.com/retro now for a free business plan trial to unlock advanced retro tools like private mode, voting, and two-way Jira syncing. That's Miro.com/retro now.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.